Mr. Cutter, Reel 8. How did you come to leave Sicily then? Because you actually went back to this country, England.
Well, back to England, actually, yes. I left Sicily, and now, the back end of October, and
back end of October.
And I remember the name of the boat, it was a boat called the Letitia. That's right. And we were taking the medal from the land in Algiers itself. And we were there for 3 weeks.
Now, there's supposed to have been quite a terrible march right out into, you know, in the rain. Do you remember that?
Yes, and also it was a bit of a rumpus on because the those who had got into this camp and the start to come with the regimental discipline sort of style. And some of the 7th Legion men, I think they got the, which they did, they got the backs of them because they'd been abroad actually from 1939 to 1932. It was quite a experiment then, you know.
They'd been in India, had they?
Well, they'd been in India for 6.5 years. And,
what do you mean?
I think that was the name of the camp was called Fernando.
Fernandez, yeah. And what do you mean they started coming on with regimental discipline? Can you explain?
You know, they wanted a sort of, seems to be in peacetime, polished buttons and polished brasses, polishes and all the... And I think that after all the fighting, you know, I think the men thought it was a little bit stiff, you know, and we didn't mind discipline.
And how did that show itself?
Well, the men just started warming and going. And there was a bit of a carry on because we made us put our little tents up instead of the camp being ready. We had to put our tents up. And I think we were there 3 weeks. I think we were 3 weeks, didn't we? And then from there, we got on a boat called the Francoon, which was an ex-Cunarder. And we landed, coming back out of the Mediterranean, once we got to the Bay of Biscay, we just heard that in the convoy there was a ship which was attacked. And one of them was the ship that I went out on there, which was the Dutch and Beckford. And of course, in those days, you had the light boats. They were all hanging at the side, just ready for the cut, drop straight in the water. And I think the sea engine went adrift on it. And it came out in a circle, and it ripped some of the boats off a boat called the Monarch. I think it was the Monarch of Bermuda. Because one of them had to go back into Gibraltar. It was important to go from back to England. So we continued on our journey. And we landed in this country at Liverpool, which I think was November the 11th.
10th of December.
December, rather.
Yeah, that's 4 weeks. That'd be right. Yeah. Now, had you had any souvenirs with you? No, you'd left your vehicle. I should have mentioned this. You'd left your vehicles behind in Sicily, hadn't you? Now, what sort of a reception did you get in Liverpool?
Some regimental band, out there, but there was hundreds of civilians there, but of course in those days, even a war in the middle, they couldn't get right up onto the cage, you know, but you could see them all in the back area, so they were all away from that, and everybody was all a wonderful time, you know, a wonderful feeling to get back in your own, get your feet back in your own home ground with you.
And where'd you go from Liverpool?
From Liverpool, we went back to Phoenix, though. We were stationed at Wigan on the seafront there. They're taking all the towers over there. And there again, I remember the hotel room that was called the Melrose. Which was all, of course, the names had all been taken off then.
Now, you got 48 hours leave. You got some leave, didn't you?
I got a week's leave. And I went on December the 13th, only 2 weeks later. And,
what sort of a reception did you get from the family when you got back?
Absolutely terrific. But I felt embarrassed a bit because the way we do all this welcome home and all that, you know, the crowd loved it. You know, you feel embarrassed, but when I eventually did get in the house, my mother was absolutely over the moon, crying at the seams. And she said, I remember her first words, it was, thank God you're home safe, son. And she said, you never guess what I've kept for you over a number of years. I said, what's that? She said, the tin of corned beef. I always remember that as soon as I said, oh my God, I said, don't mention that stuff because they didn't realize what we'd been getting in the desert. So he thought he'd been doing good. You're keeping it to one side for all that time. I said, what's this? You eat that? I said, we've had enough of that. I said, what we've done.
It was a luxury in the rationing. That's what you mean.
For people at home, it was absolutely a luxury. And I remember I had a week's leave.
Now, when you'd gone, you'd been very much a kid to your dad. You know, I mean, he caught you drinking one day. Well, I mean, you told off tape.
When I come back, it'd be so pleasing because I hadn't been medals at them, the time, you know, this, and that's what we only felt very proud of. And of course, from then on, we used to go, because I was a man then, you see, because I didn't go to the war. That's what it was all about. And of course, then we used to take the club, and that was it. We all happened to be really happy. But what I remember then was, I think it was a week's leave we got, that my mum had been taken ill with the war bladder troubles, had been taken away to someone's infirmary. And so I was away. I had to get a doctor's surgeon's building up here, I think, what's happened. And they gave me another week's leave. But what troubled me most was, as well as having the 8th Army sign up, you know, the blue cross in the white background, you could see by our faces where we'd come from, because we were probably black at the time. And at that particular time, we looked at the desert, I stopped smoking, but I started there when smoking my spectacle cigarettes, and looked at the desert with all them Vicky and Mills being up at the other Ganges. And I wanted a pack of cigarettes, so I went to the town hall in Sunderland, which used to be the YMCA. And of course, you know how you go into, you know yourself, how you go into a cafe and everything's clatter, 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 you know, the knives and forks and everybody chatting and veering on the wireless, you know, waiting in again. Couldn't help yourself speak to until I walked in. I went to the counter and asked if I had any cigarettes. Then all of a sudden, For all me being sunburnt, the back of my neck being brown, I started feeling my back of my neck growing hotter and hotter. And when I turned around, everybody in the wives had put their knife and fork down the road, and I could really expect on their faces. 8th Army bloke. I felt so embarrassed. I just walked out and I never got a pack of cigarettes there for my deal with this. It's true, that. And another thing, when you're walking in the shops, you know, in the towns anywhere, when you're walking past the queues, I was either people, you know, you'd hear the women saying, bye, but that poor soul has been through the mills, and it used to make me feel embarrassed. Look what you did, you know, because I was just by myself. Well, I was proud of them, I was proud of what I'd done, so I showed my dad when I come home. And that was that.
Now, you went back to Felix, though.
Yes, I left Felix for that.
And
you... Felix for a night, I had no guns and no equipment there. Nothing.
When did you actually get kitted out again, then?
When I went down to Brighton.
Now, during this period, there was a lot of things going on with the South Knots Hussars behind the scenes, because they were trying to get themselves reformed.
Arthur Burton, he had a bit of posting there, I think.
And...
he'd go away to the ministry, I think.
Now, were you aware that this was going on?
Not really.
And did you feel this loyalty to the South Knots Hussars? Because you weren't a South Knots Hussar, really. You were a 74th, you were a Royal Artillery man.
I was a Royal Artillery man, yes, but at the same time, by the time the war finished, I'd done more service. I'd done 4 years, over 4 years in the South Knots Hussars, and I'd been doing 3 in there.
Now, one way of telling, they often say, is whether you'd put which cap badge you'd put up and when.
Well, you had to put it. I always had an artillery badge on it. But you had to wear the, because you were in the South Knots Hussars, so therefore you had to wear the badge, the air corps. That's the echo there, you see.
So you'd always worn that?
Oh, yeah, well, that was it. That was the regiment, you see. Was it, at the same time, as I say, I was an artillery man. I mean, this, I was the only one. There was lots of people. The same as me being transferred into the north, into South West, who were artillery men, you see. You wore the badge and respect the regiment, because that was your regiment. Actually,
now, you really also, I mean, 7th Medium Regiment as well. Were you bothered about getting out of the 7th Medium Regiment and forming a new South Nuts as ours, a 107 Regiment?
Really. I wasn't personally, because I think we thought this is what I was just going to say, because I thought we worked together, and actually, we had a hell of a reputation. It was a good fighting regiment in Europe, because that's why we always got all the dirty jobs to do.
So you wouldn't really have been that much of a supporter of people like Birkin?
Not that particular day, I wouldn't, no. I would be inclined just to stay with the 7th Medium.
But you weren't that bothered, from the sound of it?
Wasn't bothered at all, no.
So if you had a preference, it was only a slight preference, and that would be to leave things as they were?
Exactly, yes. We worked together, we fought together, and we stuck together. There's one unit for all the two different regiments that weren't made good. It worked out absolutely wonderful. Coordination, everything. And another thing in Brighton, which I remember, we started to get the 5-5 guns, but they also started to bring in these American, what's called 4-wheel drives.
That was at Brighton. Now, that was actually after you were sent up to Brighton when the new regiment was formed. Because you were now going to be...
107-405. 107-405. Medium regiment, all that.
And you were joined up with some people from 16th Medium Regiment.
16th Medium, so there were 64 of us.
Did you stay in B Troop? I mean,
yes, I was in B Troop all the time. Yes.
So that would be still under Dobson. He was the troop commander by then.
Yes.
And who was your sergeant?
How that was the troop sergeant.
That's right. Now, I see from the listing in the history that you were now put down as MTNCO for B Troop, and you were a Lance Bombardier. So when did you got that promotion?
At Brighton, when the regiment was reformed.
So that was when you got it. What were your new responsibilities as MTNCO, as opposed to just being a driver who was an MT specialist?
It wasn't a great lot of more of the same responsibility, really.
Who would you drive for now? I mean, you wouldn't be one of the sergeant, the gun drivers, would you then?
No, I would just drive with anybody or two, anybody good or anybody with him.
So you were more like a spare? And would you have your own vehicle as well, not a Matador, I presume? What tools would you have?
Jacks, etc., the wheel braces, the screwdriver, pliers, hammer, etc., fuel gases for doing points, little bits of wire, the usual.
So just small scale stuff.
Just small scale stuff, exactly.
And while you were at Brighton, as you say, you were refitted up with. Yeah, and you got 5-5s again, didn't you?
Got the 5-5s again, yeah.
But you didn't get all Matadors this time.
Didn't get the Matadors, that's right.
What did you get instead?
Got these new American vehicles, which are called FWD, four-wheel drives. And I didn't like them. We started with a packing vehicle.
Now, why was diesel better in your view?
Well, because you get more mileage to the gallon, which meant less vehicles to have to carry supplies for you, because the four-wheel drive, I think, 3 or 4 miles a gallon.
And what were you talking, what would the matador do to a Gatlin?
The matador would do it at work. 1920, 1925, but you see, these FWDs, they were very, very slow as well, they were very, very low ratio gear. And I didn't get them back over the year, but in a sense I did, so I got a hold of this Major Burton. I explained the situation, I said, mine is this, I wouldn't like to go into action with these vehicles. Why? I explained, I said, well, I said, for a start, I said, with a petrol vehicle, is you only going to go 3 to 4 miles in a gallon, which means you've got to have an extra vehicle for carrying petrol and that up. I said, on top of that, I said, the tank on either side, you need petrol, you only got to have a little bit of shrapnel, and the lot's up. And I said, on top of that, the slower vehicle in the, the matador.
What speed would they go?
Maybe just 25, 30 miles an hour.
Whereas the matador would reach 50, you'd say.
And on top of that, the matador was more reliable engine than the petrol.
What about the other features? I mean, what about the view from the cab?
Actually, that's what had been built on. It was a copy more, it's a copy off.
So they looked like the matador, yeah, high off the ground, good vision. So it was the engine that was at the root of everything.
That's the engine, the power. That's right. Now, and the reliability.
Were they old as well? Because
in the
book it says the gun towers didn't have starting devices when they were first issued, and you had to run them downhill and tow each
other.
No, the FWDs. Do you remember that?
Well, all the vehicles have starters on there, in the regime, of course, you'll have starting handles, but you'd be able to swing, and that'll turn the engine on with the starting handle on the petrol engine, there's a lighter engine altogether.
So as far as you're concerned, that's rubbish, this bit in the book.
Yes, that's it. That's what got my back, it won't be the petrol engine, and two big petrol tanks either side, and on top of that, it meant if you were going into action and you don't forget you had four of these tractors in a troop, which meant you'd have wagons following you up all the time, just when you were petrol to keep you going.
Now, there was apparently some trouble in the regiment at the time between the sort of people who were used to England, probably perhaps people from the 16th Field Regiment who'd been in England all the time, and the desert warriors, as they say, between standards of appearance and bull, if you like. You know, were you aware of that? I mean, some wanted everything spick and span, and the desert lads weren't so bothered.
Well, we weren't so bothered because I know, I remember when we came through from Leeds. And then because you had to come to London. Of course, once you got in the King's Cross Station, you know, and then the military pieces all over the place, the weight, of course, by our uniform, the weight came so there was rubbish cuffs turned up, or the top button with his own gun, something like that, you know. In other words, improperly dressed. But the MPs, when they saw who we were, you know, by the signs and the colour of it, they never seen the ball.
But within the regiment, there were various rules. Like, there's one that, just an example that's in the book, is that it said that, you know, the tins that vehicles drained into at night, they had to be a uniform, you know, size and colour. Now, do you remember that sort of thing? That's apocryphal. Were there any examples of things being a little bit over within the regiment, was
just a matter of, you see, when you got the gun, you just automatically started to see the procedure again, gun drills, vehicles going to action, coming out of action, and everything.
Did you fit in well with the 16th, lads?
Well, the first people would do with Lightly Wallace, as we called them, they were different kept officially being with the 7th meeting, but they were using various soldiers.
Was there any friction between the two groups?
Well, we had a little bit of arguments, I suppose, but I can't remember any actually punch-ups.
Did it last long, that sort of friction, trouble?
No, it didn't. It didn't last a great lot of time because you had to work together as a resident, as pals. And once you start arguing with each other and making fools of yourself and get around, you go, it doesn't do. It's certainly no good for the discipline as a resident.
So you soon became just one unit. Anything you remember about your time at Brighton?
No, not particularly, just the same routine. Just going girls and looking after the news, keeping that.
You were much more on the fitter side now than the driving side. So the balance of your role had changed, hadn't it? Before you'd been a driver who looked after vehicles, now you were a fitter who drove. Would you say that's right? So the next thing is you move in 29th of April. They moved down to Yorkshire first.
Oh, Shipley.
Not for long, but do you remember that trip down there?
Shipley, yeah, we went to Shipley yesterday. Across the Shipley, weren't there very long. In the middle of all there, Shipley, that's right. And what a good reception there. The population people had a good time there. There wasn't much action there. There wasn't much going good. So that was just the same. Parading in the morning, same routine, meet breakfast, dinner, sort of sign, that was it.
Now, while you were there, Major Gibson joined the regiment as second in command. What impact did Gibson make in the regiment when he first arrived? I don't mean when he went up, because he was quite a character, wasn't he?
That's what I think he got everybody. Rallied round them and to pull themselves together and stop all the little bits of squabbling and squab, between the 16th and that, and work together as one unit.
How did he do that?
Actually, the proportion of the man, when you looked at him at the window the first time, he saw a very big man.
He was big then. I mean, I saw him late in life, but
he was a big man. But by the way he spoke, by the word of command, you really had to do it or else. It was easy as that.
Was he popular?
Well, yes.
What about Oswald, who was the actual colonel?
I can't remember much about him. I don't remember much. You see, he used to be a lord in headquarters, you see, which you didn't see.
So to you, Gibson had more of an impact. Now, the next move, you went up through Nottingham in May, and there was a parade through Nottingham. Would you remember that?
Yes, I remember what happened, but I was known that. I can't remember how I was known that. Because there was a parade. I think the photo in that couldn't have seen me. Where the hell was I? Because there's a parade, nothing where they got the freedom, I think the freedom of the town was coming. They're all on parade. Nothing. Because there's a photo of that Elliot. He's about 6'8". David Elliot, he's standing right in the front. And there I was, unless I'd been away with one of the beavers, I've been seeing one of the beavers in this one. We look at the beavers, but I can't remember that.
So what's the next thing you remember?
Well, the next thing we moved from there down to the was Bournemouth.
There was a camp at Dudsbury, which is 6 miles inland from Bournemouth. Did you know that D-Day was coming? I mean, obviously you wouldn't.
Approved themselves at the desert.
Now, how did you feel about it? Because you were those experienced men.
Well, of course, we were saying all the time, it's the same people doing the same job over and over again. What the hell are they doing in Blighty? But you couldn't expect these people in Blighty to do because they never had any experience.
Did you not think that they'd never get it if they never did it? In other words, the 50th Div and yourselves carry on doing these things?
You see, 50 Div had a wonderful a name for themselves. Our regiment in particular, Because at one time there was only the one red, one medium red and the desert. And you were more or less everybody's betting call. You were traveling by day and fighting by night. And that was your business. That's what that was your job. That's what you were there for.
So you and units like the South Nuts as ours,
we made a name for ourselves and we were going to make sure that we kept it up. And that was as easy as that.
Were you bitter at all?
No, not really. Actually, to tell you the truth, I would have hated to have been stationed in this country because I wouldn't have liked these.
You wouldn't have liked to have been called a blighty waller,
then? Blighty waller. And also, polishing and painting lumps of coal white and all that. And I joined the army to fight.
And that was the sort of bull that we were talking about. That never happened in the South, not to South, not even when you were in England.
As long as you kept yourself clean, tidy, you were presentable, that was it. There was no bull like some of these mobs. You're fucking, polish this, polish that, but I've been out playing them. In fact, when I know, some of the lads are sort of meeting with the water, they wouldn't let them in, they wouldn't walk out, I know that.
So in a sense, the regulars, the seventh lads that you'd known, they were more bolshy than you were.
Well, it's understandable because, as I said, I keep saying, we went out in 1932, we came from the hall when the war was pending up the desert. That was the only medium regiment available around that area in the Middle East. We were posted up to the desert in 1939 and they came home in 1943. That means I had 11 years of glory.
So you were grumbling about always having to do it, but you didn't really mind. It was grumbling, not
a friendly grumble. It was just a matter of speech, or a matter of, well, let's see, a habit. But we didn't mind. At least we were getting on top of it. Instead of Jerry having it all his way, we were getting it a bit our way now, and we liked it.
Now, the 50th Div, for them, it was actually one campaign too many, and they actually had to be disbanded, although they did do quite well, but they were disbanded during Northwest Europe at the end of 44. But the South Nuts Hussars managed to carry on going. Do you think that reflected that it was easier for the artillery than for the infantry? Did you think that the infantry had a harder job?
Well, I definitely think they had. Actually, myself, I wouldn't have liked to be in this field. But I know, but
you would have liked.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't have liked to be in it, to be honest.
But why not?
Well, it's all footwork, foot slogging. Whereas the artillery, at least you were mobile. And of course, up the desert, it was most of the artillery that stood the brunt. Because our tanks at first were inferior. Yes. But of course, as I said before, I know the 50 Div got a good pounding at Catania in Sicily, and I think it would start us over the years, it would start to tell.
But the South Nuts, the South Nuts as ours were still all right, even though they'd had a.
We were still all right, yes.
Now, what about the preparations for D-Day then? I mean, would it be waterproofing again?
Oh, yes, down at Bournemouth, at was a little village outside.
Dudsbury.
All of it was all prepared, all the water putting in that again, the same as we did in water for the evacuation system, extension to the exhaust pipes, and all the pepper of it as well, having water from the sticky tape and grease and everything.
You still had these FWDs then?
No. No, where the Matadors then.
They'd come back?
Yes.
What had happened to the FWDs?
We didn't want them.
So your protest had actually worked?
Yes. And unknown to me, Albert Burton was doing work behind the scenes. And naturally, we wanted the dealers that we knew would rely on and that had proved themselves. So we got them back again.
Were they as good as the other ones you'd had?
Oh yes.
Had any improvements been made to the Matador?
I can't remember any, though. They were just exactly the same people, because we were on a semi line, you see.